as fitting a place to begin as anything, I suppose, is almost a year and a half ago, change of control of the United States House, a dramatic turnover in membership. I have the responsibility and the privilege of going from being ranking member to chairman. My previous chairman, Mr. Peterson, becomes my ranking member, reversal of roles. In many ways, what we've done in the Ag Committee in this two-year session of Congress is a reflection of what was begun under Colin Peterson. We spent 2011 doing auditing hearings, looking at how the money had been spent in the Farm Bill, how resources were spent at USDA, a variety of those kind of programs. We spent a lot of time on oversight hearings. The 4.5 hours that the director of the EPA was in front of our committee last year was a wonderful experience for the committee. I could tell by the expression on her face when she left, she thought it was a memorable experience too. We've now engaged in four field hearings across the country, in New York State, in Illinois, in Arkansas, and in the western part of the great state of Kansas, looking at production agriculture and what's actually going on out in the field. Now, some of you would say, Frank, why was it necessary to have all those hearings, and why do you need 8 more hearings here in this room beginning this week? Well, simple answer, quite straightforward, is out of a 46-member committee, 23 members of this 46-member body, looking at that in a bipartisan way, have either never been a part of the committee for the Farm Bill process, or have never been a part of the committee before, never been members of Congress before, or a combination thereof. So it was important to bring everybody up to speed about how we've got to this point in Farm Bill policy, what's going on and out in the countryside, and where we go forward. And that's what this next set of 8 hearings will be, conducted at the subcommittee level, a very aggressive set of markups, getting the membership, R&D, senior and junior alike, ready to go. Now, some of you remember the hurry-up process last fall, the effort in response to the Budget Control Act, the supercommittee process, to come up with a way to dramatically reduce existing federal spending. We in the House Agriculture Committee, Colin and I, our colleagues over on the Senate side, Chairwoman Stabenow, Ranking Member Roberts, endeavored in a hurry-up fashion to craft a comprehensive farm bill, to have the language, the CBO scoring, to have everything ready to go, on the assumption that if the supercommittee would do their work, if the other authorizing committees would do their work, we needed to be ready to have a farm bill on the table and good to go. And I say this with the greatest of respect and enthusiasm for the ranking member and the chairwoman in the United States Senate and my colleague, Mr. Peterson. We got it done. $23 billion in savings. Cuts in virtually every area of the Farm Bill process, but we got it done, and we were ready to go. Unfortunately, the other standing committees, the supercommittee itself, couldn't get their work done. So all of that effort, while it did not yield a comprehensive Farm Bill as a part of an overall spending package, nonetheless, it's, I think, laid the groundwork for where we're headed now. I'd also note to you, a commitment I made to my members, both Republicans and Democrats alike, when we went through that hurry-up process, that if that was not successful, that we would return to regular order, that we'd have a more open process, we would have input from everyone. So when I make this next set of comments, bear that in mind too. And that's why the give and take of the rescission process, which was the next step we had to go through, was so important. Yes, we chose to save $33 billion-plus in the nutrition title. Yes, it was done without amendment from either side. Yes, it was done by voice vote. But for those of you who took note of and reported on that process last week, you saw that every member had their time for their input, and every member offered their insights, laying the foundation, the groundwork for what's to come. Now, I know there are a number of other areas out there before we get into the meat of the Farm Bill that are important and relevant. And the regulatory environment we all work in here, the effect that it has on rural American production agriculture, and that includes Dodd-Frank. That's not just what USDA does. That's not just what EPA does, but a variety of areas. And we're going to focus with a great intensity on that. Where do we go now? Well, we have 8 more hearings to do in this room. Our friends over on the Senate side indicate that they've completed their hearing process and they're ready to move forward with a farm bill markup. And I know, as all of you are well aware of, late yesterday that was postponed. I would hope that they'll be able to get back on track and move forward soon. If anything, I can assure you Chairwoman Stabenow will move heaven and earth to get her work done in the United States Senate. I have complete confidence. Now, which of us, Pat or myself, you define as heaven or you define as earth, I don't know, but she's going to get her part done, I'm confident. But I would say this as we conclude our hearings and we get ready to move forward. Many of you have heard me repeat over and over and over again that if you're going to have a farm bill, it has to address certain points. A farm bill, a federal comprehensive farm bill, in the commodity title, has to address all regions and all crops. Everyone needs to be able to participate. And to that end, I would note to you that achieving that is a real challenge. And in the language that I've seen that appeared to be initially what was going to be considered today, the major focus was on the shallow loss program. That's not a safety net. And that's the second point that I've made over and over and over again. A farm bill should not just be guaranteeing that the good times are the best, but a farm bill is about one or two or three or four bad years. Some of you remember the 1970s. Some of you lived through the 1990s legislatively with me. Sometimes the wheels come off, and we have multiple bad years. That's what a safety net is for. And I truly believe the concept of a farm bill is making sure that that safety net is there. Something along the concepts of shallow loss in a revenue package guarantees that the good years are going to be good. But what happens when you have two or three or four or five bad years? That causes me great angst. And along with that, I'd also say that, and I go back to this again on the issue of working for all commodity groups and in all regions. If you craft a program where one or two commodity groups benefit greatly, and a couple of commodity groups limp along, and most of the rest are left out, that's just unacceptable policy. That's just unacceptable policy. Now, I know that we're not farming in the world that we had 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago. I understand that. There are forces outside of control of the Farm Agriculture Committee that have a dramatic effect on the farm environment and on prices. The Renewable Fuel Standard is one of those. It's not a jurisdiction of the House Agriculture Committee, and I explain this time and time again at home in my district in Oklahoma. But when 45, maybe potentially in a year when you have bad crop conditions, 50% of your crop goes through a mandated federal program, that's a huge economic impact. And if you don't think it matters, look at how many acres of corn were raised before the Renewable Fuel Standard. 80 million or so? We're now at the 90 million mark, it's projected, in plantings. And the forecasts are, on the present track we're on, we'll now plant more corn than any time since the 1930s. That's a dramatic impact. If every other commodity had such a market, it'd be one thing. But not everybody else has that kind of a mandated federal market. And that does create planning distortions. You know, you listen to the old argument from people about direct payments. You're paying people not to farm. You're paying people and you're not requiring them to do something. It was the most WTO-compliant part of the previous farm bills. It also assured that the resources were there to maintain our productive capacity. But if the political will doesn't exist anymore to maintain that, then we have to come up with a safety net that addresses that. Some will argue that target prices or some sort of a system like that distorts planting. I'd simply ask you to look at the corn numbers and the shift of acres since renewable fuel standard. The rest of the farm bill is a small factor compared to that. Now, one last thought, and then let's visit up whatever you'd care to talk about. And as you can tell by the tone of my voice and the expression on my face, the commodity title is a real challenge, and it is yet to be worked out in a way that would be a final farm bill. I know that. But if you look at conservation, rural development, agricultural research, I think we are close enough, the two bodies and the work products and the great work that was done last fall, it wouldn't take long to pull all that together. I would say to you, though, in the nutrition title, we agreed last year to essentially $4 billion in savings. When CBO rescored, the savings, the changes in policy that we agreed to in LIHEAP, achieved perhaps twice as much in the way of savings. I understand in the Senate bill, basically then they just turned down the savings to maintain that $4 billion goal. I have a hard time believing with almost 80% of the spending going through those programs in the farm bill that this committee or the floor of the United States House, I believe they will accept greater efficiencies. They'll require the committee to achieve a better enforcement of existing law. And that's not to take anything away from anyone, but simply to say, if you qualify, you should receive the benefit, but you have to demonstrate that you qualify. That's out there in the mix also. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. And I have great confidence in the chairwoman and the ranking member in the Senate. I have great confidence in my ranking member of the United States House. This committee and the floor will work their will, a commitment I gave to both Republicans and Democrats alike last fall. But we have to have a comprehensive farm bill. We have to do this. And it has to be done so that it will work for all regions and all commodities. And with that, my good friends, can we talk about, Ron, what your very timid brethren here would like to talk about?
At least one question.
I suspect so.
Cortez said burn the ships when he got here. I realize you say we have to have a farm bill. We only have 30 legislative days. What if you don't? Can you take the old aid, rework it, budget, see what you're in, and come up with something possible?
I've spent a good bit of time this year explaining to my elected leadership and working with my ranking member to explain to his side of the room that whether we're unable to craft a farm bill or we find ourselves in a position where we can't finish the farm bill in time to implement it in a timely fashion, that an extension may be a part of that. I'd rather have a complete 5-year farm bill. But if I have to have an extension, it's got to be a real extension. And that's the phrase I use with my colleagues, and that's the point I try to make to my colleagues. Give rural America, give production agriculture a certainty. We're one of the most successful parts of the American economy right now. We had our tough times in the past. We lived through the tough times. Give us some certainty so we can continue to help move the whole American economy forward. But that's a decision that entails both the House and Senate, leadership most assuredly involved, and we'll see how it evolves. But right now, my goal is to work with my friends in this room and the other side of the campus to pass a farm bill and be done with our work. After all, as Ron has heard me say many times back home, you're not an Oklahoma wheat farmer unless you're a born optimist. I am a born optimist. We can get it done.
Questions number one, can the House Ag Committee end up with a farm bill that will meet Chairman Ryan's budget? Is that too much of a bet? And would you be in favor of eliminating the renewable fuel standard?
Well, first of all, I think you have to remember that each body's different. The bill that leaves this committee will reflect the priorities of this committee. we cannot pass a bill across the floor that does not reflect the will of the House. It is very likely, if the Senate's able to complete a farm bill markup, able to go across the floor, their numbers will be different than ours. I will do what I have to do to get a bill to conference, and that's where the real legislation will be crafted. The number may not be exactly like either the House or Senate number. Now, the renewable fuel standard. Understand, I come from Oklahoma. We are a corn deficit state. We raise a lot of cattle and we raise a lot of pigs. I gleefully say to my friends, and remember my grandfather Lucas and my great-grandfather Lucas were born on corn farms in Indiana, so I have a certain sentimentality for that. I'm a believer in all forms of American energy, whether it's ethanol or biodiesel or wind or natural gas or crude oil or coal. I'm a believer in all of it. But I know in my role as Ag Committee Chairman, looking at what's going on around the country as a whole, if 45% of the corn crop's going to go through the ethanol cookers, we have to have more corn. I've got to have more feed grains for the livestock industry in this country. Both the House, the Senate draft, and the hurry-up discussions bill from last fall saw a turn down in the number of CRP acres. That's the only part of this equation the Ag Committee has control over, is CRP. It's a fair statement to say that that turn down basically reflects market forces. Grain prices are high enough. Producers are choosing not to re-enroll. Land is coming out, going back into production. I think that's the practical move. But as far as the renewable fuel standard overall, no, I'm not prepared to call for an end to it. I just want to make sure if we're going to have it that we manage our grain supplies and our cultivated land in a way that enables us to meet all of our needs in the country.
Congressman, at Dodge City, a lot of the phrases used by all 10 witnesses, one was obviously the strong support of crop insurance, but the other thing they kept talking about was price protection. How do you translate the concept of price protection into real policy? What does it look like? Is it target pricing? What is it?
It is some concept along those lines. In the present versions of revenue, as I see coming from the other body, there is no floor. Once you fall through that band at the top in shallow loss, you just keep collapsing. And the preliminary numbers, and I may have mentioned this before, as I've seen run, for instance, if you're a wheat farmer, you give up your direct payment. On the upper end side in crop revenue, if you fully utilize it, you'll get half the money that you would have gotten through the direct payment. If you're a corn farmer, you give up your direct payment, but potentially the revenue protection you would receive in the system is twice per acre what the direct payment would have been. You don't have to be much of an ag economist to see why this has such an impact and has generated such strong feelings out in the countryside. But yes, Ron, some kind of a vehicle, some kind of a safety net to protect us when the bottom falls out. And I know right now it's kind of like the housing market in 2007. Prices are never going down. There'll never be enough to meet all the demand. But some of us in this room lived through the 1970s, and we lived through the 1990s. There are occasions when changes in world demand, weather conditions at home, after all, what is that famous AgEcon phrase, the inelasticity of demand for food? Doesn't take much of a move in supply to have a dramatic effect on price. If the trapdoor falls open, I want us to land on some kind of a footstool. Otherwise, you get the visual.
Mr. Chairman, have the events of the last 24 hours shifted the dynamic to Senator Grantley's farm bill debate from the Senate to the House? That side over there, like I believe that they've sort of been grabbed in the process up till now, and they sort of stalled out momentarily, perhaps. But you've been consistent all along on what you talked about a while ago about this one size fits all will not work.
as an observer looking across the building, not being a part of the inner sanctum of that culture of the Senate, it would appear to me that the message has been sent fairly clearly within the Senate that there's got to be a safety net, and it's got to be fair and equitable to everyone who participates. I think that's a very rational message. Now, what the response will be, only in the next few days, the next few weeks will tell. As I said, I have great faith in the chairwoman of the committee. She was a pleasure to work with in October and November and December when we addressed many of these points that were addressed in that hurry-up farm bill. I'll let the great process work itself out over there. You know, in the risk of stepping on the thin ice, I'd simply note to you, I've had a lot of comments over the course of the last year and a half about having such a huge army of freshmen. That's a challenge. But then I don't have a huge group of former chairmen on my committee. Don't cry for me, pray for my friend. And only about 1 million people behind me, yes. I've seen the coverage all you ladies and gentlemen have in rural America.
Share with us the thoughts of the Speaker of whether a farm bill is a priority to the chamber of the House. If you get your work done, you get a chance to get it.
I've had an ongoing set of discussions with John since the moment of the responsibility of being ranking member first, before being chairman in this session, was placed on my shoulders. There is an advantage to having a speaker who has sat on this committee for, 16 years. He understands the importance of a farm bill. He understands why it has to be done. I do, though, detect from him an understanding that in this year and a half, where it's been so difficult to get legislation done, I believe we still, it's rumored, don't have a highway bill yet. See, I can give you facial expressions that it's harder for you to report on those microphones. I think the Speaker is a practical fella. I believe if we get our work done, based on my interactions with him, I think we'll have the time we need. But he also understands that you can't go back to the 1949 policy. And at some point, we need to be prepared to protect rural America and production ag for a year while we finish sorting this out. What magic moment that is, I don't know. But at the moment that it's appropriate, I'll go screaming to the Speaker, and I expect a positive audience. And I would hope the response in the other part of the House chamber and on the other side of the Capitol building would be positive when that comes. I'm still trying for a farm bill. And with the exception of the commodity titles I mentioned earlier, we are so close to being able to do the rest of the provisions. I mean, this is just some very strong policy points that have to be reconciled. And as you've noted, there's some major differences in where we come from. I've told many of you this many times before. When my time here is done as chairman or member of Congress, whether it's Linda Lucas or the voters of the 3rd District who decide first, both have a pretty strong weight in that decision, I might add, for the record. I'm going home. Now, if you've not been to Western Oklahoma, you've missed out. But I'm going home. Part of my being able to go home is having been a part of Farm Bill policy that my neighbors can support and live with. So it's very important to me personally that we get this right, so I can go home someday. There have been secretaries and members who've had to go cool off a while. I like going to my local church. I like being able to go to the high school basketball games. I like being able to walk up and down the street. I'm going to craft a farm bill that enables me, in conjunction with all my friends and all the forces, that will continue for my ability to be among my neighbors.
USDA on the fourth case of the ESC.
It appears that USDA and the appropriate authorities in California are following all the protocols. They're doing their work as they work back through the system. This seems to be, I guess the phrase is an anomaly. We'll have more details shortly. The committee will respond in whatever fashion is appropriate. The national media and the markets seem to be reacting much calmer than in previous cases. And I would say that's an indication of the confidence that USDA and the State Departments of Ag and the food industry and the production ag industry have been able to instill in people. We're trying. We're following all the acceptable standards. We're doing everything we need to do. And, yes, I'll have a steak tonight in honor of the good work at USDA and FDA. Again, thank you, my friends. We have a long grind ahead of us.